are listening to the Stillbirth Matters podcast, presented by the Star Legacy Foundation, a national nonprofit founded on the belief that every pregnancy deserves a happy ending. My guests for this episode is Sue Steen and Lynn Zedeklik. They are Minnesota nurses and educators and founders of a Star Legacy fiscal project called Birth with Dignity. The goal of the project is to equip midwives of Uganda to decrease maternal and neonatal death while improving care for families in loss. Learn more at birthwithdignity.org. Well, thank you, Sue and Lynn, for joining me on the podcast today.
Thanks for having us.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much.
My first question is, before we get into today, let's turn back the clock a little bit. I'm curious to hear, maybe starting with you, Sue, what your professional background is that led to today and your passion project that you guys are working on now.
Okay. Well, my background, most of my career has been in nursing education and also maternal child health, so a combination of both of those. I'm currently working in maternal child health at Maple Grove Hospital and work with perinatal bereavement and loss there. But originally, I think, going back with how we became interested and I became interested in Uganda is that I was taking many groups of nursing students every year to Uganda, teaching them in a cultural diversity course. And being that my area was maternal child health, we were spending a lot of time in hospitals, pediatric settings, and obstetrical settings. And during that time, we became aware of the tremendous amount of loss, perinatal loss in Uganda, both mothers and babies, stillborn babies, preemies, and newborns, and also became aware of maybe the lack of the type of care that we would hope that a family might receive as they were experiencing that loss. So I think that those years of seeing a lot of loss just created a desire in me, in us to maybe be able to make a difference, maybe be able to create a change in hopes of maybe improving some of the bereavement care that the families receive.
Lynn, how about your professional background?
Well, I've been a nurse midwife for many years. I was doing an assignment in nursing school and saw the word nurse midwife and just knew I was supposed to be one, even though I didn't know what that was. So I came to Minnesota to pursue graduate school and have fluctuated between clinical practice and teaching. And Sue and I, our lives intersected at a university and then more deeply intersected by taking students to Uganda. So Sue started that in 2010. I jumped on board in 2011. And in all my years as a nurse midwife, I had never had a maternal death. And when I saw moms die in childbirth and many babies die in childbirth with our students, I just knew that maybe there was a better way and a place for me to make things change in whatever capacity I could in Uganda.
For our listeners who maybe aren't that familiar with Uganda, and really for myself, before we talk about the hospital settings in Uganda, can we talk about the country itself? Can you paint a picture about what it's like there?
Do you want to do the country and I'll do the hospital?
Yeah, I think that Uganda is a little bit bigger than Minnesota in terms of, I think, area. So I think that helps to understand when we talk about numbers of stillbirth and numbers of maternal death. It's probably around that size. It's a very rural country, a lot of villages, many different languages spoken. English is their main language, and there is also another language, Luganda, that is spoken by many. But there's also, I think, maybe close to 300 other languages that are spoken throughout the country. So that in itself can, I think, be a barrier to healthcare and education and things like that. There are some main cities, then there are some smaller towns. There are 14 regional hospitals, I believe, where I think we're hoping, you know, we can maybe make some inroads and make a difference in those areas. I think of some of the issues with stillbirth and maternal mortality are that sometimes it's very difficult with transportation and communication for women to get into the city or into places where they might get more adequate health care, more care for their birth experience. So I find we love the people. We find the people to be lovely people, open people, just really interested in improving conditions and things. You know, I don't know the details of the history other than just broad things related to Idi Amin and those kinds of things, but I'm told that, you know, in these past years, it's been hard for them to recover from some of the things that went on politically, but I find them to be very, very motivated and very interested and really desiring of that and very open to us and the work that we have done there.
That's great.
And because many people speak English, we feel like our care it's been easier to give. We don't, once in a while we'll have an interpreter, but for the most part, we can communicate pretty well with people. Like Sue, I just love the people of Uganda. About 50% of the country is under 15 years old. So everywhere you look, there are moms and babies. In the United States right now, I think we're at about 1.9 children per mom. And there, they're at 5.6. And that's down from 6.6 10 years ago. So the population is women and children everywhere you look. And just so much poverty. It's just the first time it was kind of unfathomable for me to see the level of poverty in the country and the way they have to live because of that. Mm-hmm. Just the hardships and the amount of work they do every day just to put food on their table. So it's, you know, it's so radically different than the United States, and the hospitals are even more radically different. When you go to a hospital there, care is free, but that doesn't mean that free care is the same as private care. Mm-hmm. Education is not free, so people really work hard to try to get their kids educated, and then they also work hard to try to even get to the hospitals. So with regard to birth, a lot of people just birth in homes. Mm. And like Sue said, transportation's such an issue that to even get to a hospital or even have permission by your loved ones to go to the hospital sometimes is a barrier to even getting good care in childbirth.
I'm really drawn to the why behind why you two are doing this, because I know a lot of people would hear about the suffering that goes on in Uganda and say, oh, that's terrible, but not do anything about it. Others might go one time and help out, but you two continue to go back over and over again. Why?
Well, I think we feel that we've been equipped in ways that we can make a difference there. But I also think that Lynn and I value life. I think we would say that we believe that God has created and values life all over the world. And so he values the moms and babies of Uganda as much as he values the lives of U.S. moms and babies. And so I think because of that, we just really believe that the women of Uganda and babies deserve respect in life and respect in death, and so that if he's equipped us to be able to teach, be able to share our knowledge, maybe even to share what the global standards are for bereavement care, that it's kind of a call, and I think that we're responding to that call. You know, in all different kinds of service and work, I think you find that if you're really in the place where you're supposed to be, you almost feel like you get more than you receive from the work that you're doing. And I think we both would say that we feel that way, that that it's not always it's not a comfortable time there, from physical comfort, from cockroaches, whatever you want to say. So it's not a trip. it's not a vacation. but I think we will come back feeling exhausted, but really filled up, because we feel like we're really making a difference in areas that are important and in areas that we value.
I would completely agree. I think Sue and I both said at one point, if we could save one mom or help one person bereave differently, it would be all worth it. And it has been extremely worth it, because we see numbers changing and we see lives changing. And so, like Sue said, there's no part of this that's a trip or easy, but extremely fulfilling. And I always feel like if you're called to something, you don't have the same kind of burnout, and you have a very different level of joy. And the joy is not in the creature comforts. The joy is in knowing that you have a purpose, and that purpose is what you're doing.
Mm-hmm. Here in the U.S., we have stigma surrounding pregnancy loss, stillbirth, etc. I'm assuming it's a lot different than it is in Uganda. Can you talk a little bit about the stigma surrounding this topic?
Yeah. Well, the first time, I think we can almost combine death, but maternal death, stillbirth, maybe are perceived a little bit differently and same at the same time. The first time I saw a mom die in Uganda, it was because the dad had to go collect money for blood and came back and there wasn't enough time. And as they were hanging the blood, she passed away. And I watched them prop her up between two people on a motorcycle to take her back to her village. And it was just so shocking to me. The next day, saw another mom die, both from the same thing, postpartum hemorrhage, which is the number one reason moms die there. And what I also noticed, and I think Sue notices this in bereavement care too, is very little emotional reaction from the moms, from their loved ones. And we really had to kind of deal with that and get to the bottom of that. And I remember asking someone that I just adore there, do moms not mourn the same way maybe we do in the United States, where we cry and grieve? And she said, oh no, it's exactly the same. There's just not the freedom necessarily to do that. And there's so much death that they're surrounded with that after a while, you just become probably more tolerant of those feelings. When Sue and I go and teach different classrooms, we'll say how many people have either known someone in their family or a friend who has died in childbirth. And I would say 40%, 50% of people raise their hands, where I don't know anyone here in the United States who has had a loved one die in childbirth. Mm-hmm. So it's extremely different there, but what we've realized is the depth of mourning and grief is the same. It just looks different. Mm-hmm. Would you agree with that, Sue?
I think that's good. And there was an article written in the Lancet series in 2016 by Juliette Kegulli, who, and I believe the title was Weeping in Silence. And I think that speaks to what you're talking about, that we just believe that mothers all over the world weep over the loss of their babies. But if you have to go back and take care of your six other children and work in the fields the next day, sometimes there isn't a lot of time for weeping. There certainly isn't a lot of time to even process, I don't think, what's happened. So I think that that's definitely a part of the situation, is that these women just, they may not only have experienced a lot of loss, they just really don't have time, I don't think, to grieve. And I do want to mention the stigma, though, too, related to the fact that there are a lot of spiritual beliefs, kind of mixed spiritual beliefs that go into this, whether it's that people will think that there have been evil spirits around, and so they won't want to be with this woman, or if the woman is told that she shouldn't talk about the baby that she's lost because it might make her have another stillbirth. There are some things that I think are pretty commonly believed there that contribute to the fact that she's not going to discuss this, or that no one else will discuss it, you know, with her. And then I think there's something, Chris, at a higher level too, that I think we're hoping that we can impact with our education on perinatal loss and bereavement. And that is that the director, the medical director of the hospital where we have one of our programs there, told us last February that the word bereavement isn't even really used very much in Uganda, and that our program at Mbali Regional Referral Hospital would be the first perinatal bereavement program in the country, because it's just not something that's done or talked about. So I think that there might, again, just be a lack of knowledge about it. And so I think that that's what motivates us, that even though there are lots of barriers, we believe that through education, through teaching, through exposing people, the Ugandan people, of even what bereavement care is, that maybe we can make a difference in that. And that maybe as more people are educated and understand bereavement and the need for it, then maybe more midwives, healthcare workers will be able to talk about that and even offer that a little bit more to the families that lose a mom or the families that lose a stillborn baby.
And can I add one thing to that? The women, the people of Uganda are tough in the finest sense. They have really hard lives, and I'm in awe of them in how they have to handle their struggles every day. And so women in Uganda, when they give birth, there are no pain medications. There are no epidurals in labor. These women give birth, stand up, put on their underwear, and go home. We try to convince them to stay a day in the hospital, and many won't do it. So that toughness also, greatest strength, probably greatest weakness also, because if you try to give care, the nurses may say, you're making her soft. And you shouldn't make someone soft when they need to be tough. So I'll never forget the first time. This was probably my third time to Uganda when I saw stillbirth. And I said to the nurse, I would like to offer this mom the chance to see her baby. And the nurse said, no, you're going to make her soft. And I said, could we just give her the choice of whether or not to see her baby? And the mom held her baby. First time I ever saw someone sob over their baby. And the nurse was shocked, and it was really kind of a neat moment where I don't know if I changed the nurse's impression, but the mom sure was grateful that she had a chance to take that time with her baby before she got up and left a couple hours later. So that whole impression of toughness, I think, rides through the whole culture, because they have to be. They have to be tough, but in that, we also want them to be able to be vulnerable and soft, and give them a chance.
That's a great segue into the main thing we're here to talk about, which is, what is Birth with Dignity? When did this concept begin, and what is the mission?
Well, probably 3 years ago, I think, maybe four, we began talking about dreaming about a way that we could try and make a difference there. And Birth with Dignity just really evolved and has continued to evolve, I would say, over these past years. And if you wouldn't mind, can I just read our mission statement? Because I think we worked hard on it, Chris. But I think it succinctly describes what we hope to be and what we are. And that is that our mission is to educate, support, and equip nurses and midwives of Uganda to improve care for patients and families with high-risk perinatal needs, with the goal of decreasing maternal and neonatal deaths, as well as caring for families with perinatal loss. And so I think there's a couple of things in there, and we've talked about, I think, what created the desire in us to really value and respect the lives of the Ugandan moms and babies as much as here in the U.S. But I think the other thing that comes through on that is that we want this to be sustainable. You know, so you were alluding to, you know, people just going over once and different trips and things, and that's just kind of a whole different thing than what we're trying to do here, because we're trying to equip them. We're trying to create a program for them to lead and run. We're trying to educate them to offer this to their fellow Ugandan people. And so I think that's critical for us, that we know we're not going to be there forever. We know we can't be there all year long. But we do know that we can go there and we can continue relationships with them while we're here in order to try to make change in those areas.
Yeah, that's a great answer. I think it's interesting how the history of Birth with Dignity evolved. Sue and I, the first time we went just by ourselves, ended up teaching about 350 students and midwives and med students in many different universities and hospitals. And, you know, as it goes in Uganda, we didn't know who we were teaching when our plane touched down, because communication is super rough. All we knew was we were supposed to be there. And when we got there, we were hoping to teach. You know, we thought we'd be just ecstatic if we could teach 50, and we'd go in a place and there'd be 120. And our very last day of teaching was probably our most miserable teaching session. We thought we were going to be the star of the program, and we walked into a room to find that people had been there all day learning about different things in their hospital. And we were kind of the tag on, the add-on, because we were bringing Coca-Colas to the group. And it was scorching hot in that room, and everyone was tired. Certain people were literally falling asleep. And we were told that we only had a brief period of time, so we condensed our teaching. It was really a mess.
And we weren't teaching anybody that had anything to do with maternity nursing. We were teaching
janitors
that were in a whole different area of the hospital.
Right. So we walked out a little frustrated. And someone came up to us. I think she felt a little bad because she told us it was going to look like, you know, one kind of session, and it obviously was not. But she said, you know what? I think there are some people here who really would believe in what you're doing, especially with bereavement care, especially with loss. And we said, well, why don't you get those leaders together in your hospital and we'll start talking. And there were five leaders, and we started communicating on Skype pretty much every month. Sue and I would start at 5 a.m. so that they could be on Skype at 2 p.m. And that's how Birth with Dignity started. We wanted to equip them, if they were going to lead their hospitals, to not only learn more about loss and how to prevent it, but then also start this bereavement program that Sue alluded to. So we didn't begin Birth with Dignity. We began by being teachers, and that came out of our worst session, which is, I think, what we've learned all along the way, that it's not really about us, that things are just put in place, and we're just supposed to go and obey and answer the call.
How would you describe the accomplishments that have been made thus far? What impact have you made in Uganda so far, and how much farther is there to go?
That's really hard to measure, Chris. We know that the maternal mortality rate has significantly dropped in the hospital where our program is working. And I don't know if Lynn has the numbers, if that...
I do. So we went there in 2018, mm-hmm. 17, mm-hmm. 17 to teach. Mm-hmm. And they told us in 2018 to 19, their maternal death was down by 25%.
Wow.
And our focus with maternal death is pretty much postpartum hemorrhage, because we feel like you can do something about that. And they were down from 31 deaths to 11.
Wow.
in that.
And you know, you can't, there are other things obviously involved. We hope that we certainly had an impact on that, but it's certainly going in the right direction.
Oh, yeah.
And I think the other thing that we know from a bereavement standpoint is that really many, many families are offered now to see and hold their babies and are provided with blankets at Birth with Dignity supplies to them. So that we can wrap their baby in order to have them hold their baby. It's kind of hard to not have a blanket to wrap a baby in. So there are some kind of simple, practical things like that that we've been able to implement at this hospital. So we know that there's been change. I think, though, that as Lynn talked about, with just kind of following and next steps, we are really happy with how this program is going right now. But we really feel that when we go back in November, we really feel called to some other things. We feel called to go back and educate more in other parts of Uganda, in different universities and hospitals, to possibly plant another program somewhere else in Uganda. We're not sure about that, where that's going to come. But also really are hoping to sponsor a conference for nursing leaders throughout Uganda, which is challenging in a lot of ways. But are really hoping to take it maybe to another level in that way. So as we talked about, I think we feel really good about what we've done so far, and I think we're really excited about the future and maybe even looking at things in a different way.
Yeah, I would agree, Sue. There, Birth with Dignity is not only teaching throughout the country, but this one program that kind of organically grew happened at a hospital called Imbali Regional Hospital, and we just do some basic supplies for them, which blankets, because stillbirths, the parents usually save that blanket for the next baby, and so they don't usually have something to wrap the baby up in. We give them Polaroid cameras so that they at least offer a picture for people to go home with. On the hemorrhage side, we've given them a Mama Natalie simulator, so we're teaching them what to do in the steps of hemorrhage to try to A, prevent it, or B, deal with it quickly if it happens. We bring hats. We've done an emergency cart for postpartum hemorrhage to just give them equipment. So that's the program. So we have a program side and then a continuing education side that we feel that next time we need to support the program we have, see if there's other places that want to initiate a program, and if nothing else, even if they don't, we still feel like we're called to keep teaching and teaching. You know, one of our busiest hospitals here in the Twin Cities does about 6,000 births a year, okay? The busiest hospital, the one I started off with in Uganda, does 30,000 a year, 100 a day. And sometimes those units are run by a couple midwives. So they are taking care of people who are laboring on mattresses on the floor. I mean, there are just so many births throughout the country that we feel like it's time to put the feelers back out and really take this teaching back on the road and see if we can make a bigger impact in some of these other regions.
You know, even though my wife and I experienced the loss of our daughter Reese and it was extremely tragic, I can't help but hear the two of you talk about the conditions in Uganda and feel some sort of gratitude that, well, at least we had a warm hospital bed and we had good care and we got to stay there for 3 or 4 days and all this wonderful compassion from our friends and family, and we didn't have to go right back to work the next day, and all of these things that I took for granted. But this is a big question, but is there anything that you think people in the United States, whether it's lost parents or anyone else, if you want them to take away one thing from this conversation and Birth with Dignity, what do you want them to take away from that?
That's a great, deep question. I think one of the things you said, Chris, was all of a sudden you have this new gratitude of what we have in this country. And we feel the same thing, you know, at the very bottom foundation is, wow, why are we here and they're there? Mm-hmm. But I believe that just educating is so important. And I think that's the basis of change, you know, bringing the standard of bereavement to a different country that's never known what that standard is and kind of locked in their own ways, I think is so enlightening. So I just love that people here support us there. We couldn't do it without our family support, mm-hmm. and our loved ones' support. And then, you know, some people choose to help us financially. For the most part, Sue and I have pretty much financed our own Birth with Dignity, and that's fine. But we, you know, we want to put on a conference. We want to do some things that will take different resources than we've needed in the past. But I just think letting people know that there's a different world that's not necessarily like it is here is huge. It's mm-hmm. the first step to having other people seek out what's going on in the rest of the world with regard mm-hmm. to maternal and child care.
Well, that's such an interesting perspective, Chris. I appreciate you sharing that. And that's the gratefulness for things in the midst of tragedy and sorrow, which can still happen, right, what you're talking about. I think that it, you know, losing a lot of moms and babies in Uganda doesn't make it any easier for losing a baby here. But I do think that just the support here, like you said, for each other, the Star Legacy's support for people, working hard to decrease the rate here can only help decrease the rate there. Working hard on promoting bereavement standards here and working with organizations like Star Legacy or ISA can only help more there. So I do think that the work that we do here, the knowledge that we do here, the research that we do impacts the world globally. So I don't think that it makes it easier to lose your baby here, but it may help you just continue on educating here, informing people, making people aware of the importance of care of families, the importance of continuing on to try and decrease the rate of stillbirth and maternal mortality worldwide. We are part of Star Legacy. We're happy. We're very happy to be a part of Star Legacy. We're called fiscally. Sorry, you can tell my world is not fiscal. Chris, far from it, my husband would say. Fiscally sponsored project, of Star Legacy, and that's been wonderful. And
what does that mean, fiscally sponsored?
It means that they're really kind of our nonprofit. It means that we don't need to be a nonprofit, that they can kind of be our nonprofit and take care of all of that, and so that we can kind of do the nitty-gritty and just be in Uganda. We do have our own website, birthwithdignity.org, and so you can find us on Star Legacy's website, but you can also find us on birthwithdignity.org. So if people do want to become a part of that, that'd be great. There's a place to donate there. But I think that also has increased our awareness globally. And for example, I was with, you know, Lindsay at Star Legacy at ISA in Madrid and was able to talk to people about Birth with Dignity there, just, you know, globally, and see that people here at Star Legacy, people there at ISA care about this. And that's really motivating for us. I think that, you know, Lynn mentioned it, we really take people with us. We really do feel mm-hmm. inspired and supported by our family and friends and people who do want to be a part of us, whether it's financial or whether it's just prayer support or whether it's just caring about mm-hmm. what we're doing there. It really does make a difference to us, and we really do feel like we're taking people along with us. Yeah. And we tell them that. We tell our Ugandan team mm-hmm. of nurses and midwives that this isn't just us, that we're really bringing a lot of other people, you know, along with us.
My final question is a fiscal question. So maybe I'll direct this one at Lynn.
Okay. But I'm fiscally worse.
Oh, okay.
But I'll give it a shot.
Sorry, Chris.
But I think people listening to this podcast, some of them may hear that you too have been reaching into your own pockets to pay for these trips and this amazing work you're doing, and they may want to go to birthwithdignity.org and make a donation. But what would that money be used for tangibly? Just anyone who may be inspired to make a donation.
Yeah, that's a great question. I think in the near future, it would be used for two different things. One is to continue supporting the project we have at Mbali Regional. And we have given them a computer. They take all our PowerPoints and go throughout the rural areas and try to teach the rural areas new things so that there's... So they're reaching out also. We've given them projectors. We have someone in Uganda that makes the blankets for us now. We have a privacy screen. So we have different things, Polaroid cameras, different things that we feel are important to be able to do both prevention of loss and bereavement work well, to give some of the things that we see as standard of care here in the United States. The other thing is to continue to teach. We really are excited and have had some really good initial feedback about this conference where we want to bring nursing leaders from these 14 regions and cast our vision to them about bereavement care with stillbirth and about prevention of maternal and neonatal loss. So to bring that all together, it's really different in Uganda. And I think us in the West set up this precedent where you, instead of paying to go to a conference, you pay them to come and you feed them. Sometimes you house them. So it looks very different than our model here of continuing ed in the United States. So, we don't drive ourselves. We have to have a driver. So just some of the logistical things, but mainly we just feel like the more people we teach, the more we'll be able to impact that country. And so that needs to look many different ways. Mm-hmm. But we're most excited about the conference and then going to different places and impacting hospitals and universities again. Mm-hmm. Can you think of anything else?
I think that's great.
Well, thank you both for the amazing work that you're doing, and thank you for taking time out of your day to appear on our podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Chris.
Chris.
That's all for this episode of the Stillbirth Matters podcast presented by the Star Legacy Foundation. I'm Chris Duffy. Thanks for listening.